This is the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. I'm Eric Balkman from the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour and the FFPC. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric Balkman and the FFPC on Twitter at FFPC. Today I'm speaking with John Luxem, a multiple FFPC Dynasty League champ whose career winnings total well over $20,000. In this episode, we talk about what NFC West receiver is a prime Dynasty buy, why trading for aging production is sometimes the right choice, and much more. You can follow him on Twitter at jlux71. Before we get into the show, I want to remind everyone that you can get a listeners-only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all the RotoViz content and tools, and it helps support the podcast channel. Now, without further ado, here's $20,000 high-stakes dynasty champ, John Luxem.
When you are, when you're not playing high stakes football with the FFPC Dynasty Fantasy Football as well, John, what do you do for a living?
Well, I actually own and operate a bunch of Dunkin' Donut restaurants here in the Chicagoland area.
And as, so, and yep. Go ahead.
No, that keeps me pretty busy, and then I have two kids who are sports crazy kids, and we spend most of our weekends at some kind of athletic tournament.
What? How old are your kids?
My kids are 11 and 9 and play year-round sports and anything and everything they can get their hands on.
I got it. Yeah, that's I used to be one of those kids, for sure.
I think we all did, right?
Yeah, we all did, yeah. And 2016 FFPC main event co-champion Nelson Sousa also owns a bunch of Dunkin' Donuts franchises in the New York area. And I would say I need to start eating more donuts, but you would say it's something else.
Yeah, it's got to be the coffee. That's the liquid gold. That's what makes it all happen.
I love that liquid gold. Okay, good. So you won the FFPC 500 number 18 last year, Dynasty League. And one of those players on that team was Mark Ingram, who split time with Alvin Kamara. And obviously, if you had one or both of these guys, you probably did pretty well. I'm curious, given that Kamara, you know, really crushed it with a lot of long runs, a lot of touchdowns, a lot of scores, a very hyper-efficient running back last year, Mark Ingram, who's been pretty solid the last couple of years, he could actually have another good year, maybe even a better 2018 than 2017.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, Mark Ingram, he was a solid RB2 last year. He had over 50 receptions, over 1,000 yards rushing. He is just a workhorse. And, you know, Sean Payton showed that they could fold Kamara in. And while Kamara kind of took the world by storm, Mark Ingram was the steady Eddie, just rolling it out, getting 1,000 yards again. His rushing touchdowns were up, but his overall touchdowns were only up by 2. So he had a lot more receiving touchdowns before Kamara. I don't see why he can't continue to be the rushing workhorse, and Kamara picks up that receiving role, and they keep the tandem going.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it could be, and maybe Kamara is you know, that same type of running back again in 2018. But we already saw that even when he is, Mark Ingram is very, very valuable. So there's no reason, like you said, for that to continue coming into this season. Let's talk about a couple of different off-season trades that you made, and they're interesting because the quote-unquote normal in Dynasty is trying to acquire assets that are going to increase in value, you know, players that have not peaked yet, so you will get them for their peak years. But you zagged when everybody else is zigging here. You acquire Frank Gore for, again, basically, you know, nothing, a late sixth-round pick, and then Marshawn Lynch for, again, not very much draft capital that you had to give up for him. So while most people are trying to dump these running backs, you know, before they fall off the edge of the cliff, why did you go the opposite way and acquire both these guys?
I'd like to say I'm crazy like a fox, but I just like older players that produce. And these are two guys that have shown throughout their careers that given the opportunity, given the workload, that they're going to produce. Now, you know, I traded for Gore before he went to Miami. I was really hoping for maybe a better spot than that, but I think him going home to Miami Kenyon Drake is nice, but hopefully he'll get enough touches. And when he does get touches, he produces. He almost had 1,000 yards last year playing in Indy with no Andrew Luck, with no real offensive structure going on there. It was kind of just him and nobody else. And I think that he is just a guy that has shown throughout his career he's durable. He's not going to get hurt. And for a sixth-round pick, why not, right? So, but Lynch is a little different. I was excited when Gruden took the job there. I thought, he's going to get back to running the ball hard. Oakland had a down year in their offense. I was a little shocked that they got rid of Michael Crabtree, and I don't know how that's going to play out for the overall offense. But I think you can't go wrong with a guy that produces when he gets the ball. I mean, he still averages over 4.5 yards a carry. He's going to get you touchdowns. So why not take a flyer on some of these older guys that I know are going to produce rather than taking a flyer on a young guy that, quite frankly, might get cut before the season even starts?
Let's talk about a shift from running back to receiver here and talk a little bit about Doug Baldwin. He was a guy that helped you win this dynasty title last year. And I think, let's read between the lines here a little bit. Seattle has lost some pretty significant contributors on defense. They've lost Jimmy Graham, a guy who caught a ton of touchdowns for them last year. We already know that the offensive line and running game is not where, it should be for this team. So this Seahawks team in 2018 might actually be playing from behind a little bit more than they've been accustomed to. So you look at Doug Baldwin, who's really the big or, the only offensive weapon that Seattle has right now. Is this a buying opportunity for dynasty owners to try to cash in on Baldwin, not pay a ton for him now, and then maybe flip him after the season if he does catch, 85, 90 balls, 1,100, 1,200 yards, 8 or 9 touchdowns? I mean, this could be an interesting opportunity for dynasty owners to get him now and then maybe flip him or keep him at the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on there. I think that who else is going to catch the ball out there? Russell Wilson loves this guy. He's steady Eddie for him. He's a solid, wide receiver too in my eyes. Still gets well over 100 targets every year. The last 3 years has been right around 1,000 yards receiving every single year. He just produces. Now the touchdowns, he's not really, any of these guys trying to forecast the exact number of touchdowns can be difficult, but he's going to definitely give you, somewhere 8 to 12 touchdowns. And why wouldn't you want that? Another guy that is going to produce, as long as he doesn't get hurt, he's going to be on the field. And he makes plays, and those are guys that you need on dynasty teams. You can't have a dynasty team just with a whole bunch of rookies and darts and hopeful, prospects, because you're going to wind up just not cashing enough to sustain waiting for those guys to eventually produce, i.e. see like Devontae Parker, see Dante Moncrief. Those guys, while they had all the metrics, they haven't produced, and if you've been holding on to those guys for this long, while other guys are holding on to Baldwin and winning dynasty championships.
The other thing about Doug Baldwin, and maybe this is just cutting to the heart of dynasty owners in general, but this is a guy, especially this time of year when we get all enamored with who's going to be a first-round pick, how tall is he, how big is he, how fast is he? Doug Baldwin, not the fastest guy in the world when he was coming out of Stanford. He was an undrafted free agent, not the biggest guy, 5'10", 192. This is a guy that's sort of been, kind of unheralded his whole career. And the fact that, this is his, whatever it is, eighth year in the league now, this just represents to me like there's nothing shiny about him other than his production. And I feel like if you go out and get Doug Baldwin right now, you might get him for less than, or you should get him for less than market value. And he could be one of those guys that just totally outperforms what a lot of people think he'll do. I think he's a great dynasty buy right now.
I think so too. He's still young. He's, like you said, it's eighth year in the league. Russell Wilson has a great rapport connection with him. Guy makes plays, runs good routes. He's just somebody that you can rely on to put up, somewhere between 10 and 20 points a week for you.
We should probably actually talk about, this is not something we talked about before the show, but the big Brandon Cooks trade that went down yesterday, where New England now ships him to Los Angeles. And he will be, you know, well, I don't know. I'll let you answer this. The number one, the number two, the number three. I mean, they have Woods and Kupp there. And certainly Todd Gurley is still going to catch a lot of passes. So let's talk about this first from the Rams' point of view. How does Cooks fit in to this offense? How good is he going to be in 2018? And most importantly, what does this do for his dynasty value?
Well, I mean, you know, they could have gone a little more economical route with the Rams. I mean, they could have kept Sammy Watkins and not given up a first-round pick to the Patriots. And the Patriots always seem to pull off these crazy first-round moves, trading first-round picks to get, you know, guys that really, you know, nobody would think that would be on the trading block. But Sean McVay out there in L.A., he's putting the weapons. I mean, it's like Avengers assemble out there. I mean, with the defensive stuff that they did with getting Tlaib and Sue and Peters and, you know, all these assets that they got out there, and then throw on top of it, now they got a legit burner guy that can produce in Brandon Cooks, and he's still on his rookie deal. Will he be the number one? I don't know. I mean, they got a lot of good other – Robert Woods is a solid wide receiver. Cooper Kupp, you know, he's a great slot receiver. I mean, they got all the makings now. If Jared Goff can just take the next step and prove that he is the real deal, like Carson Wentz showed until he got hurt this year, and take that next step, I mean, the Rams are going to be scary.
Brandon Cooks might fit in pretty good in this offense because I think we as Cooks owners in the past have complained that he just doesn't get the targets that you would be normally accustomed to for a guy who was going in the first or, you know, late first or second or sometimes third rounds of redraft leagues. And in this offense with Goff, who's sort of been, you know, his talent has been unlocked by Sean McVay, he's able to spread it around to Gurley and to Kupp and to Woods, you know, and so maybe Cooks doesn't get the targets here, but the production definitely should still be there. Shifting over to New England, and we look at what they're left with now. You have Julian Edelman, an aging Julian Edelman, coming off ACL surgery. Obviously, I think that this bodes well for him and his future in New England, that the Patriots are willing to do this. You have Chris Hogan there, and then a couple of other first-round picks that kind of washed out with their original teams. But Cordarrelle Patterson and Philip Dorsett are still there. You have Kenny Britt there as well. Malcolm Mitchell, if he could ever stay healthy, is also on that depth chart. Where is there value to be gotten right now, striking while the iron's hot, by acquiring any of these players? Who are the receivers to own in New England now?
Well, I think, you know, Edelman, I think, honestly, that's the narrative for the entire season coming up. Edelman, look at all the guys that got hurt this past year that were top producers up and down the line for these teams. You know, David Johnson, Odell Beckham, Dalvin Cook, A-Rob, 15, Carson Wentz, Chris Thompson. I mean, the list goes on and on of top producers for their teams that got hurt that are going to be coming back for this season coming up. Like, Edelman is like the forgotten guy, but he was a solid, I mean, borderline RB1, you know, wide receiver one, wide receiver two guy. Brady loves him. Brady loved Hogan. I mean, those are, call them system guys, call them whatever you want. It works in New England. So Edelman coming back, I think, you know, now that Cooks is gone, it's going to be hard to get Edelman at a discount. You probably could have got Edelman at a discount before this. But, you know, Belichick keeps the system rolling. Who knows what he's going to do with those two first-round picks if he keeps them both and draft guys. But, you know, Kenny Britt is a solid vet that, you know, obviously flamed out and washed out in Cleveland. And you know, but he can produce. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him produce. But between Edelman and Hogan – and Tom Brady, I mean, Tom Brady's what, 40, 45 years old now, 42 years old, whatever he is. I mean, he's the QB on my dynasty team that won. And I keep joking that he's a Hall of Famer and nobody wants him, but he just keeps producing. Those are guys that help you win titles. So I think, you know, status quo in New England, and Edelman and Hogan are going to be great.
Yeah, I you look at Chris Hogan is actually, he signed that 3-year deal coming over from Buffalo. In 2016, so he will actually be a free agent after this year. And you look at Julian Edelman and his contract, he is basically under contract for not very much money over the next 2 years. So I think you look at what the Patriots are thinking here. If Hogan has a big year, maybe they pay him and it's going to be Edelman and Hogan the next couple of years. If not, maybe they use one of these top four picks that they have on a receiver and try to develop him. I know New England usually has not had a whole lot of success drafting receivers. Maybe they try to buck that trend this year, but that is going to be something, you know, especially with all the opportunity there that's, you know, available in New England for these receivers. That's something to pay attention to as we get closer to the start of the season. Keeping it on the receiver tip, you talked about him before. Michael Crabtree, cut by the Raiders, signed by the Ravens. Now, you look at what we see in him right now. He's the number one for Baltimore. He's obviously very accustomed to being the number one. He was one in San Francisco, and he still got a ton of targets in Oakland, you know, despite being alongside Amari Cooper. But Baltimore could take Calvin Ridley or Cortland Sutton or somebody like that in the first round. If that's the case, are you willing to roll the dice if you own Michael Crabtree and keep him on your team and hopefully, you know, they don't take a receiver early and Crabtree gets, you know, he's in line for a big 2018? Or are you trying to part ways with him right now just in case, you know, he does fall victim to playing opposite a rookie receiver that is the quote-unquote future in Baltimore? How do you treat Crabtree for dynasty purposes right now?
Well, I think that most of these guys, like Crabtree, that are older veterans that produce, you know, he had 8 touchdowns last year, 8 touchdowns the year before. Now, obviously, Oakland, their offense struggled last year. Derek Carr didn't have a great season. I don't think Crabtree was the problem in Oakland, but obviously Gruden wanted to go in a different direction and is going to rely heavily on Amari Cooper out there. I think Flacco should love having a veteran receiver who knows how to get open, knows how to run routes. It's been in the league quite a while. Has not a problem having volume targets. I think that if they do draft somebody as a rookie, as you said earlier, he's going to still be a rookie. I mean, even at the – if they draft it, I think they draft one in the middle of the first round or something like that.
Yeah, 16.
Yeah, so, you know, they're going to draft somebody. It's going to take a while for that person at 16 to come in and try to get up to speed. And meanwhile, Crabtree, you know, he's just going to keep getting open. Flacco loves, you know, to throw the ball down the field. Now, Crabtree's not a burner anymore, even if he ever was. But he's just another solid receiver who can catch the ball and put up points. I don't know what's not to like. Now, eventually, these guys are getting older, and so you're going to try to trade them. You're not going to get the full value. So, you know, I think that's the fine line when you have these vets. You know, giving up known production for not as full value as you want to get for them. What's the point? I'd rather keep them, keep the points, and rather than giving up to get, you know, a round or two rounds behind in value that I think that they're worth.
You know, and that's a great point because I have unsuccessfully tried. I did it right with one player. I'm going to tell you about it in a second. But I have tried unsuccessfully to try to guess when receivers, running backs are going to be, you know, declining to the point where they're no longer worthwhile fantasy guys. The one guy I got it right on was several years ago when everybody kind of gave up the ghost for Hines Ward, said, you know, he's done. There's no coming back. He's not going to be a relevant fantasy player anymore. And we said that, well, not we, but a lot of good dynasty players said it for like 3 or 4 seasons. Okay, this is the year. Now this is the year. And I kept holding on to him. You know, I didn't trade him. I didn't shop him. I said, no, I'm never going to get full value for Hines Ward because I still believe in the talent. Now, eventually he did fall off the face of the earth. And that last year in the NFL was not a great one for him. But the fact that I was, and maybe he's a rare situation, but the fact that I was able to hold on to him that long and got all that production where, you know, even if I would have gotten 100 cents on the dollar for him, maybe it's in the form of a draft pick that would have busted anyway. You know, you bring up this point, John, of having this proven production on your roster, and that can't be underestimated in dynasty success.
And I'll give you another name, Larry Fitzgerald.
Perfect. Yep. Next guy I'm going to bring up.
I mean, guys are kicking themselves because they sold Larry Fitzgerald 2 years ago for, a third round pick or a fourth round pick. And here he is still putting up 1,000 yards receiving. There's no other number one wide receiver in Arizona. Now, the QB situation's a little dire out there. I mean, if Bradford can stay healthy, then maybe that's good for Fitzgerald. But is this the year that Fitzgerald, takes a step back and calls it quits? It's trying to find that balance. And I'd rather take the production and try to win over, taking that shot on a rookie or a pick that can bust out. I mean, if you go back and look at rookie draft boards, I like to do that from time to time, go back to previous seasons and look at outside of the second, the first and second rounds. I mean, the players that are taken in the third through seventh round, those are complete dart throws, and maybe you get one that hits out of every round. I'd rather take the Crabtrees, the Hines Wards, the Larry Fitzgeralds, and guys that I know are going to give me some points at least.
On my other show on the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour, which you've been on before, Dave Gerzak and I were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, and I can't remember if it was him or me who brought up the list of the first round NFL first round receivers over the last, I don't know what it was. It was like 10 years or something like that. And outside of 2014, when you had Watkins and Beckham and Evans and all those guys, and Robinson was a second round pick that year, and you had all those that crazy year. Outside of that, man, I'm telling you, the bust rates for rookie receivers that eventually went in the first round of rookie drafts, obviously, it was insanely high. I mean, it might have been over 50%. So that's first round picks. We're not even talking about second or third round or anything like that. So and especially this year, I think that's something that to keep in mind, that we want to have those shiny draft picks, but they're not assets until you turn them into the correct players, into the non-bust players. It's nice to have them right now, but man, if you can flip them for production right now and in a proven player, you're never going to get higher than what you can get for them now.
Right. I mean, even, I took Corey Davis last year in a couple of leagues that I had, the first or second pick, and, he finally started producing towards the playoffs, right? And some of those, you were starting to wonder, is this guy even going to produce? But then you look at Chicago, look at the Bears, Kevin White. I mean, there's example A that you want to bring up. We here in Chicago were super high on Kevin White. We're still high on Kevin White because he's barely played. He's played, 10, 15 games total in 4 years?
There's not enough tape on him to not like him at this point.
Right.
You don't have enough ammo to say, oh, this guy's terrible. You don't know yet.
Right. Exactly. And, hopefully with Nagy coming in and A-Rob on the other side and Taylor Gabriel and Tariq Cohen, the upside's huge for the Bears. I really hope for Kevin White's sake that he can – stay healthy and show the world what he can do. Cause obviously, he showed it in college, but till he does it in the pros, you're just another first round bust right now.
In short bench dynasty leagues, like the FFPC where, you have to cut down to whatever it is, 15, 16 players, at roster cutdown time, how do you, I mean, for somebody who's never played dynasty like that, where it's kind of like almost like a huge keeper league rather than a dynasty, how do you, if somebody's never played that before, what's the most important thing to tell them to keep in mind in regards to managing your roster properly in that style of league?
Well, one of the things you bring up, 16 spots, right? And then, the rosters at season start are 20. So we cut down to 16. So you're basically going to have four draft picks that are going to stay on your roster unless you make some trades, right? So accumulating all these picks, I see guys that accumulate all these picks and they may have 10, 12, 13 picks. Well, you're going to have to cut some of those guys. And they haven't done anything on the field yet. So you're drafting all these rookies and all these guys with great upside, but you're going to cut half of them. So I still like to stay with the veterans. Veterans help you win. Try to win now. Rookie fever is fine, but it can kill you. You get a team that's all a bunch of rookies and prospects, and the bust rate, is too high. You got to have guys that can produce. But I will say, if you like a guy, go get him. If you like a guy and you're picking at the 1-7, 1-5, whatever it is, and you're not getting another pick, and you like a guy, he may be a second round talent, but you want that guy. And I'll tell you a guy that I did that with, and people are going to say, yeah, you did it. Tariq Cohen. I thought that guy was going to be great. I was living in Chicago. I saw the hype on him. I bought into it. I knew I wasn't going to get a chance to get him, where I was drafting in the rookie draft. So I went up a round or two and took the guy that I wanted. So if you see a guy that you like in the rookie drafts, maybe he's a round higher than whatever the official, prognosticators are saying, go get the guys you like. It's your dynasty team. Find the guys you want, and don't let anybody sway you. If you go by ADP alone, you're going to have an average team. That's why it's called average draft.
Getting your guys is you will never, I mean, you will always hear me championing that. I think that's, it's a key to victory. It's a key to making fantasy enjoyable, too, for
right.
sure. As far as your FFPC Dynasty Leagues go, John, is there a guy that you've been trying to buy maybe on the cheap right now? And then conversely, another guy that you're actually shopping around to try to sell him right now?
I'm a little intrigued by, and I know people are going to say why, but Kelvin Benjamin in Buffalo, he was a number one with Cam Newton. They traded him. I think there's a guy that's got some skills that you could probably get on the cheap. Another guy like Cam Meredith, another injury guy that flashed a little bit. You might be able to get him on the cheap. I've been getting a lot of requests for people trying to get Mixon from me on the cheap, and I keep declining these offers that I see from people because they're really either thinking that I'm sour on Mixon, but I think Mixon's going to have a big year in Cincy. So that's a guy that, I'm not trying to get on the cheap, but people have been trying to get from me on the cheap. Some Aguilar, another solid guy, looks like he's figured it out in Philly. Those are a couple of the guys. I mean, some longer shot type guys. Vance McDonald in Pittsburgh is a guy that flashed a little bit this year. They don't really have a solid tight end position figured out in Pittsburgh yet. Jesse James is nice, but I think Vance McDonald, you can get him on the cheap. And then there's guys that have been starting to kind of creep into my peripheral vision a little bit, like Cameron Artis Payne in Carolina. I think he might get a shot to be the RB1 there. So who knows? Take a flyer on a guy like that. A veteran guy, he might figure it out. And we know he can play in the league. Might be a better shot than taking somebody in the fourth round of a rookie draft that you may or may not have ever heard of.
I can't believe we've made it this far in this podcast. We haven't talked of rookies much at all. But since the onset of the NFL Combine, a lot of teams have had pro days. Obviously, most of the pro days have been complete. And with the news that's come out on those, has there been a rookie whose stock has significantly gone up a lot for you? And then on the other side of the coin, is there a rookie that maybe you're kind of rethinking as, okay, maybe this guy is not the type of player I thought he was going to be?
It's kind of a cop-out answer, but, Barkley, how can you not be impressed with what that guy did at the Combine?
Right, yeah.
So if his stock was high, it's got to be even higher. Obviously he cemented himself as the consensus, pretty much one rookie number one pick by his Combine stuff. Nick Chubb, I think he showed himself pretty well at the Combine, helped himself out. I know it was tough for him to share the load and coming off an injury at Georgia and sharing the load with Sonny Michel. I think Calvin Ridley, you mentioned him earlier, might be a possibility for Baltimore. I think he's somebody that did a good job at the Combine. Some of the dropping, guys that didn't do so well at the Combine, I'm not really sold on either of the Josh quarterbacks, Josh Allen and Josh Rosen. I'd rather take Baker Mayfield all day long. I think the guy's a winner. I think he can play. I just think that some of those quarterbacks that with their completion rate and their accuracy, I just think they're doomed for failure in the NFL.
Yeah, it's like I'm talking to Dave Gerzak right now, because I know he does not like either of the Joshes for dynasty purposes, and I believe he is also a Mayfield guy, and remains to be seen where he's going to end up, but he's certainly created a lot of buzz. It's weird that the guy who won the Heisman Trophy, we've kind of, you know, poo-pooed a little bit and talked about Allen and Darnold and Rosen, and all of a sudden Mayfield's like, you guys realize I was pretty good too. So now all of a sudden he's in that top five, maybe overall pick, first overall pick. We don't know what's going to happen there with Cleveland.
I hope not for him.
Right, exactly.
I mean, yeah. Avoid Cleveland. Everyone wants to avoid Cleveland until they, you know, I feel bad for Jarvis Landry. Cleveland's tough. Till they turn it around, I mean, they're going to be the butt of all of our jokes.
Could this be the year, though, that they turn around? I mean, they get Tyrod Taylor, has probably, you know, been one of the better quarterbacks they've gotten in the last few years there. They could potentially add Barkley, and even if they don't, they already added Carlos Hyde, who's coming off a nice season, Duke Johnson, who came off a pretty good season. Josh Gordon is going to have a full off season under his belt, and he looked all right when he came back last season. You have supposedly a healthy Corey Coleman and Jarvis Landry, who's a threat to catch, you know, 90 passes. David Njoku, you'd like to think, takes a step forward. I know they have to replace Joe Thomas at left tackle, but that offensive line was improved last year as well. I mean, how good can Cleveland be this year? I mean, you get enough of these talented guys there, maybe they can turn this thing around.
Well, I mean, you know, if you told any team, say, you're going to have a 5-game improvement over last season, right? You're going to win 5 more games.
Right.
Love it. Right. Well, unfortunately, Cleveland, 5, you're still finishing last.
You might be picking in the top 5 again with a 5
exactly.
improvement. Exactly.
So, I mean, I wish Cleveland was better. I mean, I do like Carlos Hyde. I was shocked a little bit that they, you know, I knew that they were thinking about getting rid of him. They weren't very happy with him in San Francisco, but he produced. He's another guy that just produces. I got him on a couple of teams. Carlos Hyde is a solid player. Tyrod Taylor, you know, he's okay. But yeah, I mean, you got Corey Coleman, first round pick. You got Jarvis Landry. You're absolutely right. They have playmakers. I just got to wait for them to see it and do it in those uniforms.
Exactly. Yeah. That's always the bugaboo. Can they do it? You know, they've done it anywhere else. Can they do it in Cleveland?
Right.
What's a guy, or who's a guy that you can't envision yourself really taking in first-round rookie drafts this year, a guy that you think is going to be a bust, a guy you're going to stay away from, and then maybe a sleeper that is going to slip to the second-round, third-round of rookie drafts that you think could actually have a pretty nice dynasty career?
Well, I mean, I'm not a big Notre Dame fan, and I'm not a big fan of any of the guys coming out of Notre Dame. St. Brown, I think he's going to wind up being a bust. I really do. I just don't. Nobody from, I mean, maybe I'm missing somebody, but I can't recall too many stellar guys coming out of Notre Dame and making a big impact in the NFL. Golden Tate, maybe.
Tim Brown, going it back. Like,
yeah, years. I mean, okay. So we're going to go back to when we were kids, you know, the Lou Holtz era. I just would stay away from any of those guys. Again, the Joshes I would stay away from. You know, some guys that I'm high on, I think that kid out of Oregon, Freeman,
yeah,
is going to be a monster. And you can get him probably mid first round. You know, guys that are a little later, like Auden Tate, out of Florida State, unbelievable skill set. The guy's, you know, he's a freak. Maybe he can put it all together. Bo Scarborough out of Alabama. I think he could be a solid producer for a team. I mean, the guy was a giant out there on the college field. And then, you know, because FFPC, you know, the tight end premium, you know, I think Mark Andrews is going to be a solid tight end out of what, Oklahoma? Or
Yeah,
out of Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So those are guys that I think you can get later in the rookie draft. You know, I think it's going to be running back heavy to start most rookie drafts.
Yeah, and Freeman, I think there's a chance you might even be able to get him later than the mid first. I mean, it'll obviously depend where he goes. I mean, if somebody takes him in the early second round, he's going to go higher. But he might be a guy that slips. And Auden Tate, this is a guy, you know. And John, I don't know if you know this, but I'm a big Florida State fan, and watching him over the last couple of years at Florida State has been fun. However, his testing was, he had, I mean, a bad combine. His pro day wasn't all that great. But I am hopeful that he resembles a guy who had a historically bad combine from Florida State last year, Dalvin Cook, and really, really, really looked good in his limited time in Minnesota. So hopefully Tate can do that as well, because I want to like him. I want him to do good in the pros, and I'll definitely be with you on nabbing him later on, because if it was just a case of having a bad day or a couple of bad days and he turns out to be a pretty good pro, I don't want to miss on him if I can get him in the, you know, the early to mid-second of rookie drafts.
Well, that's the thing, right? When you get into the second and third round of rookie drafts, most of this is a landing spot for these rookies. Are they going to get an opportunity? Are they going to get a chance to get on the field? And, you know, obviously first round picks, if guys are taken in the first round, they're going to get a chance to play right away. But if some of these guys go to teams that have obviously, you know, openings and open competition for those starting spots, I don't see why some of those guys that we mentioned, Freeman, Tate, Scarborough, Andrews, can't get a chance to try to get on the field.
Well, listen, John, I am so thankful that you took some time out of your schedule today to do the lowdown with me. I really appreciate it. I wish you nothing but the best of luck in both your rookie drafts and all your drafts in 2018. And I am going to head over to my local Dunkin' Donuts, grab some coffee, and hopefully I will have some good rookie drafts in front of me after downing that tasty beverage.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and you know, I appreciate the FFPC for all they do. It's the best place to play, and I love playing Dynasty there on top of, you know, main event and football guy stuff. So without you guys doing what you do, we wouldn't have a place to play. So thank you guys.
Well, thank you so much, John. I certainly appreciate the kind words. And like I said, best of luck to you this season. We'll talk to you again real soon, man.
All right, we'll catch up soon. Thanks, Balky.
Thank you for listening to the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. And thanks to Grapes for our theme music. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the RotoViz Radio feed. It helps us find new listeners. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think. And follow us on Twitter @RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the show by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.